Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Matt DeFrance of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joined by Nathan Mills, also of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Nathan, the Blues season is over. It is done with. The regular season is done. The playoffs have started, and the St. Louis Blues are not a part of it. The lockers are cleaned out. The interviews are done. That's kind of a wrap on the season. When we look at it as a whole, what were your kind of overarching thoughts about the Blues season that was?
Oh man, you know, as you were kind of going through it, your tone, like I kind of expected you to come in like kind of just droll, you know, like, oh, turn out the lights, the party's over, you know what I mean, like something like that. But no, you were up and down, and that's kind of how the season felt. I mean, it was kind of a long down and a long up, right? But like, you know, there was good and bad, more good than bad, at least for longer, you know. But the big thing, you know, to me that I'm taking away and that I'm kind of you know, I don't know, maybe looking forward to for next season is how some of these young guys looked, how the roster's changed up and is going to change even more. I mean, so, yeah, this season was, you know, nightmare to a dream in some cases and just not good enough at the end to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, I've had, I guess, some time to process this season, right? I mean, it's, for the most part, been over for quite some time, if we're being honest, right? Like I think there was the post-Olympic run that we all saw them go on that we kind of thought, oh, maybe they're gonna do it, you know, they're you know, 4 points back with two games in hand, they're right there. But you know, realistically they were 14 points out at the Olympic break. That's just not a gap that you overcome in 25 games, and it was too much. And so I think, you know, the tone that I came in with is just, it's just, I've had some time to think about this, right? It was like what it was in 2023. That was my first season coming into St. Louis, and I got here and then the season was kind of over. It was over for quite some time. Yeah. You know, when they started trading, you know, Tarasenko at the All-Star break, and you know, obviously we know O'Reilly and Barbashev came later, but that season just felt like it was a slog towards the end of it. And it was a similar feeling this time too. Like it was not something where they're in it the entire time, that there's good storylines, that there's a point in every season where all people care about are the results of the games. So you hit that point in February or March where it's like, I don't care what happens at morning skate. I don't care what happens at practice. Tell me what happens at the game. And I never really felt like we reached that point a ton because the results weren't all that meaningful or indicative of what the season overall entailed for the Blues. Like when we got to that calendar, that part of the calendar, it was more about how are these guys playing? What roles are they taking? I remember it was one of the, I think this was before the trade deadline, but it was like a home game where they lost. And I was like, the most meaningful things that came out of this game is that Logan Mailloux played, you know, 22 minutes and Jake Neighbors wore an A. Like those were the things that mattered in those games. And it felt like it was a lot of that in the last 2 months of the season where, yeah, it was more of the things that happened in the game and less of the results overall that really mattered. So I've had some time to process this.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I hadn't really thought about it in that way. Not the processing part, but just the point at which you care less about the intricacies of what's going on with the team and more about just, you know, who won or lost at the end of the night. And as you were talking through that, I was kind of thinking, okay, when did that end for me this season? And then did it pick back up? And I will say there was one point where I was back. I was all the way back in, and that was right before those two Colorado games just a couple of weeks ago where they had the long point streak, and then they beat Colorado on the road in that first game. And I was like, okay, I'm all the way in. I am on this bus. And then 2 days later, bus is in a ditch. So I mean, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, yeah. I mean, that's the way the season is gone. You know what I mean? And, but they did hook me there for just a second, just for a split second.
Yeah. And if we look at the whole season overall, like there's no other way to look at it than a very disappointing, frustrating season. Like this was a year with expectations that they would be a playoff team. And I know we talked at the beginning of the year and the thought was that they could very realistically be a top three team in the Central. There was some variance in there. I thought with a more progression from players and better goaltending, they could even challenge for the first spot in the division. Obviously, that was way off, but I also thought they could be in sixth place in the division with some downturns from guys and if you goaltending, and that was a little bit closer to where they ended up. And the fact is, like, they were 2 seconds away from making it to the final eight teams last year, and they found themselves in second to last with 2 months of the season to go. Like, that's just where they were at. That's the kind of disappointment that came out of this season. And it kind of makes you rethink where they're at, because did they rush into kind of prematurely ending a retool over last summer? Did they think they were further ahead than they actually were? Where are they going now? I think those are things that this season calls into question, that you don't really know where they're at, because last time they thought that they were progressing, this season happened.
You say that like almost like it's a curse, man. Like,
the last time they did this,
this season happened. I think you're right, but I think it's important to keep in mind like how much was going on this season. I mean, you know, remember how hot that top line was, you know, for the last month of the season and change. And then keep in mind that all three of those guys missed significant time this season. I mean, so it's going to be difficult to have the consistency when you just don't have the same guys on there. You know, at that point, it's not really a chemistry problem. It's not really a game plan problem. You know, it's a personnel problem, and not that the personnel is not capable, just that they're not there. You know, I mean, I don't think that's the only problem. There were problems with defense, the goaltending, including Joel Hofer, who was a delight all season long outside of October, you know, started slow. I mean, so it's not just injuries, but I mean, I think there's a lot of context that, you know, I don't think it's as simple as did they move too early off of this rebuild. And, you know, maybe it's a, you know, you graduate from high school and you take a gap year, you know. I don't know what you do on that gap year. That's your business, you know. But
well, I'm going to tell you what the Blues did. The Blues re-signed Cam Fowler during their gap year, and they, you know, went out and got Pugh Suter. And this was before they decided it, but, you know, Pavel Buchnevich is under contract on his eight-year deal. So, like, those are moves that you think, hey, like, we're right there. Listen. Let's push in a little bit. And I mean, I don't think they were pushing in everything, but they at least were in the realm of it. So
they didn't go all in. They just took a stab at the pot. You know, they tried to buy the pot there at the end. And they
re-raised a little bit. Huh?
I will say, you know, I took two gap years. So maybe it'll be two gap years, and then they'll go to college, and then one day they'll be at the Post-Dispatch like me. You know, I don't know.
The whole team.
No, I don't think we have the budget for that.
Yeah, I don't think they'd be good fits either. I've seen some of them talk about education. you mentioned that Thomas Holloway Snuderud line that missed a lot of time this season. You know, Thomas finishes with 64 games. He missed 18. Holloway finishes with 59 games. That means he missed 23. Snuderud missed 12 games. So, like, there was some decent time that they all missed. And Thomas, it was three different injuries. You know, he had one in Detroit where he kind of had a collision with Alex DeBrincat. He had this lingering leg thing that kind of dated back to last year. He had a head injury after he was taken down by Pierre-Luc Dubois. So he had three different things going on. Holloway had the high ankle sprain that cost him pretty much 2 months outside of one game where he tried to come back early. And Snuderud had a wrist surgery. And all three of them at the exit day interviews kind of talked about how much the health impacted the finish of their seasons themselves. And, you know, Snuderud said, yeah, I mean, I just felt more confident when I had that. And his injury didn't really bother him a ton for a lot of time. it was maybe a game or two, I believe. I think it happened right after Thanksgiving, and then he had surgery the next week. Yeah. So it wasn't like it was a lingering thing that maybe for a guy like Robert Thomas, who, like, yeah, he maybe was trying to manage things and maybe trying to battle through things and ended up needing to get surgery. So I think different stories for all three guys, but the fact is that we saw when they were healthy what they could do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talked last time about, you know, whether you keep that line together next year, whether that's an option, whether that's the intent. You know, it may not happen. You know, we have seen this before where a line comes together, seems to build some rapport, some chemistry, has some success, and then just doesn't get replicated the next season. So, I mean, it's far from a guarantee, but, you know, as we were talking about kind of the down season and, you know, kind of the rug being pulled out from under a rebuild, I guess, you know, I just, there was some good within the bad, you know, with the context of everything else. I mean, even within the injuries, right? Thomas still a point per game player. Granted, it's only in 64 games, right? You definitely want that, or 60, however many it was, 50.
64.
How many games did he play? 64. That's what you said.
Yeah, you got it.
I got confused. I have. Well, see, I make notes while you talk, you know, so I'm like, okay, 64. And I think I flipped him and Holloway. Anyway, you know, he's still a point per game player, you know, and then you come back after that and they had between the three of them, what, like 95 points or something like that in 25 games, you know, like that, yeah. Just an insane, you know, production. Now you can't expect that for a full season, but you know, you get each of these guys a little healthier next year. And, you know, I'm not saying all of them play 82 games, but if they all play 75, that's going to feel really good if they can get close to this kind of production. So, you know, I think that, down overall, certainly right to be disappointed, and honestly, like, right to be disappointed, you know, in at the end of that run, right, where now, because it's happened, because we got to see a little bit of what they could do, you know, healthy and playing well, now the draft slide, you know, the draft position gets hurt significantly. You know, I mean, when we came out of the break, they were number two in draft odds, and now they're at 11, you know, I mean, so that's the trade-off of getting to see some positives toward the end of the season is, you know, now you have some negative for the draft, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned a little bit about exit day and what those three guys said about their line, but there were other things that were maybe a little bit noteworthy, most particularly on Thomas, Parayko, and Bennington themselves. They were all asked about their futures. They all have varying degrees of control over their futures. Obviously, Thomas and Parayko were in the headlines during the trade deadline. Parayko used his no trade to block a trade to Buffalo. Thomas was just in rumors, and he said he was never asked to waive his no trade clause, so the Blues never got to that point. Bennington, meanwhile, he's the backup goalie right now. Like, that's just the truth of it. Joel Hofer came in and he took his job this year, and it wasn't like previous seasons with a guy like Ville Husso, where Bennington took it back by the time the season ended. He's going to go into next season, and that opening night start is not going to be Jordan Bennington. It's going to be Joel Hofer. If they had made the playoffs, that game one start is going to Joel Hofer, and it's his job to lose in that scenario. So, you know, Bennington, he was asked whether he wants to be a backup goalie, and he had his response. So, let's take a listen now to what Thomas and Parayko said about their futures, and then we'll follow up with what Jordan Bennington said about his.
Colton and Robert, you guys both had eventful trade deadlines for different reasons. If the topic gets broached at the end of the summer, what factors go into your decision? Obviously, you guys have control over any sort of trade that would happen. What goes into those decisions for each of you guys?
Yeah, sorry, don't want me.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you got to go through a process with your family, and like I was saying before, you know, there's a lot of conversations that need to happen this summer, and you know, those haven't happened yet, so I can't really speak too much on it, and I guess we'll kind of see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I guess pretty much the exact same. I guess there's like you said, there hasn't been much time for conversation since everything is wrapped up, but
Hey, Jordan, I presume this is awkward, but I'd like to just know what you're thinking about for next season. What can you share are you, obviously Joel was really great. You're great too. But if you were the backup next season, would you be okay with that with St. Louis? Or are you looking to start elsewhere? What can you share?
I think it's, you know, Senior and I are going to have some conversations. And I think for me, I'm a competitive goal attender, right? I love St. Louis. I think for me, it's just taking care of what's in my control. It's the same old story I give every time, but I think if I take care of what's in my control, then the rest will unfold. I believe in myself and in my process, so I'm excited to get to work.
So, yeah, I mean, those three guys, they're, I wouldn't say they're open about what they said. I mean, Robert Thomas is basically saying you've got to talk to Steen about things. Like he said, there's conversations that need to happen that haven't happened. So I don't really know what the future is. I guess that's fair enough. And Colton Perico basically said that. And Jordan Bennington had similar-ish feelings that, you know, they got to see what Alexander Steen thinks about this group and what that direction looks like moving forward. Now, I do think Thomas is probably in a different boat than the other two of them. Given age, productivity, contracts, overall value because of those three things, like there's a lot that he has going for him. Plus the fact that he makes the guys around him so much better. Like without Thomas, who's driving a line with Snodgrud and Holloway? Right? Like it feels like he's in a different situation than those other two guys.
Yeah, and I think it the Blues have made that clear, right, with the reported asking price for him. I mean, the price tag is reportedly so high that likely no one would pay it. And if they did, you know, it's one of those things like you have to blow the Blues away if you want to get a guy like this. So, I mean, that makes sense. It makes all the sense in the world to me. I would, you know, if you were ranking them in terms of like likeliest to be moved, he would be, not only would he be at the bottom, it would be like those two guys, a whole lot of blank spaces. And then Robert Thomas, I think.
Yeah, and I think with Bennington, the way that I took what he said was basically, if I do what I'm capable of doing, I'll be the starter. Like, I don't need to worry about finding a starting situation because if I'm as good as I believe I can be and if I do the things that I can do, that's going to take care of itself. So it doesn't sound to me that he needs a move, that he's wanting a move because of the situation in St. Louis. It seems like he has a lot of self-belief in himself to try to get back on track and do what he needs to do to earn a job back wherever it is. But in his mind, I think he's kind of like, yeah, if I do that, then I don't need to worry about much.
I mean, we've always known that. About Bennington. I mean, maybe not that specific, you know, thought, but the guy's a competitor, always has been. That's why he's so good in goal. That's why St. Louis rightfully loves him, right? And I don't just mean as a player. I mean, they've really embraced Jordan Bennington in a lot of ways. And so, I mean, I think that's kind of what you would expect from him, you know, and it's great to have that attitude, but the reality is he's getting a little older. He's, you know, he's not in kind of the core age of where the Blues are at right now. Certainly probably doesn't fit a contention window, you know, unless somehow this season was just a fluke, which does not seem to be the case, right? So, I mean, I think just as much as there are a lot of things working in Thomas's favor to keep him in St. Louis, I think there are a lot working against Bennington to keep him here. I mean, he's the backup goalie, and at least as it stands, and yeah, right, he probably believes that he can take that job back, but you know, at his age, his price point in terms of his contract, and you know, honestly, being so good the last month and a half to, you know, 2 months of the season has maybe helped his stock a little bit after a really early really tough early season this year. It kind of seems like, you know, just the same way, we mentioned Thomas is probably the least likely to leave out of these three. Bennington probably feels like the most likely of the three to leave.
Yeah, and I think we can see what happens in the playoffs with some teams and how their goaltending looks in big moments. Mm-hmm. And given Jordan Bennington's reputation as a big game goaltender. If teams that get bounced earlier than they want can kind of look at him and say, is he our answer? Because our goalie was not very good in big moments. And with, you know, Parayko, I, the way that Doug Armstrong talked about the direction moving forward, he basically said, yeah, we might need to clear a little bit more space. There might need to be a little bit more room, a few more pieces. And it didn't mean that they're going to ship everyone out, but if you're shipping out a piece or two, I mean, obviously we talked about Bennington, it could be something. Parayko, they've obviously tried before. Maybe the offseason is a better time to move, to find a new house, a new city, all that stuff. And I wonder if that's kind of how they view him moving forward as a piece they can move out and be a little bit younger on the back end too.
Well, he's still got his full no movement clause, does, right? Yeah. So, I mean, anything, yeah.
Full no trade.
I mean, so, you know, we've seen this before. I think they'll probably try to move him again. Whether he approves it is kind of up in the air, you know. I don't know. That one's such a weird one to me because it kind of feels like it seems pretty clear they want to move him. And the haul they reportedly were going to get in that Buffalo deal, maybe that'll increase, you know, should they actually get to move him this summer. But, and I don't know. Some guys, I mean, we had just this season, right? The quote was, if they tried to trade you last season and they tried to trade you again this season, it's probably time to move on, you know? And
yeah, it's the same. Yeah.
Right. And maybe if that's the same, feeling Parayko has, maybe we see a move. I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, you can get asked only so many times before you kind of get the picture, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you, if my wife tried to trade me at least once, I think I would be out. But like, yeah, it's the second time she asked me, I'm definitely out. You know, that's the only team I have. So,
yeah,
that's the best. I don't play sports. Like, look at me, obviously not. So like, that's the only team I got is my wife. So I have to figure that out.
And I think the other thing with Parayko, he just played his 800th game as a St. Louis Blue in the last game of the season. He's looking right at Barrett Jackman at 803, second all time. And if he's here for two more seasons, really a season and a half, he would pass Bernie Federico at 927 games. That would be the most in franchise history. So given what Colton Parayko thinks about the city and the organization, like, he lives here in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of players go home and he lives here. So I think he likes the city. He likes the organization. It's the only one he's known, and he is not that far away from climbing into some very, very rarefied air within the Blues. So I feel like that stuff matters to him. Now, how much does it matter if they keep on trying? But it is something that I at least think about with his thought process and where that goes. Now, I wish we would have gotten a bigger look into his thought process instead of saying, yeah, there are conversations. But I think that's probably me thinking that we would get things that we wouldn't. So
yeah, well, you know, it's funny when you brought up Parayko, like as you were walking through, you know, what will he or won't he kind of situation, like I was trying to think about what he said, and then I realized he didn't really say anything. He just kind of said no and kept going, which his prerogative, more power to him by all means. But I just, you know, there's no telling, I guess, what that motivation could be. It could be he loves the city, could be he loves the franchise, could be just didn't want to go in February, you know, could have been, no, I'll do it in the summer. Who knows? I agree. I wish we knew more about that.
Yeah. And, last couple things we want to get to here. Number one, just want to touch on the coaching staff, assistant coaches, Mike Weber and Claude Julien, their contracts were up after the season. They were not renewed. And so now Jim Montgomery has the task of filling a staff, and he has an entire staff to fill. Steve Ott is currently the head coach in Springfield in the AHL. We'll see if he's in that spot next year, but I don't imagine that we'll be welcoming him back to St. Louis as an assistant coach. They add the two assistants that were just not renewed now, and there's three spots that Jim Montgomery will look to fill. And maybe that ends up being two, depending on who they get and what roles they can do and what duties they have. But they'll need someone to run the power play. They'll need someone to run the penalty kill. And this is just my own experience with Montgomery from Dallas. I know when the first opening he had in Dallas, he hired John Stevens. They go back two decades, previous head coach in Los Angeles. He's currently an assistant coach in Vegas, and I don't know what his contract situation is with the Golden Knights, and if it's up, if he's eligible to move, if not. But I just wanted to point out the connection that Montgomery and Stevens have. Now, Montgomery and Doug Armstrong, in the last, I guess, week or so, each had their own thoughts about how the season ended and what to take away from how the Blues played post-Olympics. Jim Montgomery said, basically, I don't take a lot out of it. You know, that there's a lot of guys that make careers on playing when your team's out of the playoff picture. And he said, yeah, it's easy to play. There's not a lot of pressure on you, and it didn't end up really mattering. And Doug Armstrong kind of echoed that a little bit similarly. And during exit day, when he said, yeah, I don't put a lot of stock into it, because for a lot of time we were playing with house money. And then we put ourselves back into the race. We had to play with our own money. And then came the loss in San Jose, the overtime loss to the Kings. They win that game in Colorado that you mentioned earlier, and they come home and lose that game against Colorado at home. So that little stretch was when they were in it, and they go 1-2-1 when the chips were out on the table. A lot of poker references this
pod. I think we need a Post-Dispatch poker podcast. It's just the PPP.
Are you a poker guy?
Not enough to host a podcast, but hey, here I am on a hockey podcast, so maybe I could.
So, I mean, that's what they thought about the kind of the post-Olympics run and what it looked like from their perspective. What did you think about what they were able to say?
I think they're right, you know, at the end of the day, and they have to look at it, you know, the way I'm coming at it is a lot of times is just as a fan, to be honest with you. I mean, it's exciting to see that kind of hockey being played well, you know, and it's exciting to have your team go have like a 730 points percentage, you know, over a certain, that's awesome as a fan. You know, then you start looking at kind of the economics of it, right? You know, you're talking about house money versus your own money, but I'm talking about the draft capital you lost in that run and still didn't make the postseason. Like there's nothing to show for it. If you kind of hurt yourself in that way, but you make the postseason, maybe you avenge last year's, you know, last second loss, right? Maybe that makes it worth it, you know, in the feelings department, you know, to make that run. But at the end of the day, when it got real, they couldn't get it done. So you hurt yourself for nothing. I think at the end of the day, it's too little too late. I think Montgomery said almost exactly that in his words about it, just maybe 4 or 5 days before the season ended. You know, what are you going to do? You got to figure it out earlier next year. Hopefully in October, not in March.
What's the real world slogan? Is it like from MTV? Do you remember that?
I don't remember the slogan. It was like nine people living in a house in New York City or whatever, you know? It's like,
I think it was like when things stop happening, when things stop being fake and things get real.
And things start being real. Yeah. The real world. That's and then there's like thinking. A horn section or something. Sure. Yeah. You know, and now that you say that, I kind of want to just do like Blues Real House, just put all the players in there, you know, just that's what we do over the summer to, like, you know, build the camaraderie. And
I mean, that's just called a road trip. They all just, that's
called, it's a road trip. 3-month road trip that doesn't leave St. Louis. That's what they need.
Sure. We'll go with that. I think that about does it for the first segment, and we'll get to the second segment coming up after this. We'll take some readers from some questions from readers. We have a new mechanism through our Post-Dispatch website to take questions that will be used in written mailbags and answered here on the pod. And we're hoping to have this be a regular segment. We've had a really good response from people so far, and so we'll get to some questions right after this.
Welcome back to NetFront Presence. And Matt, you know, my favorite segment we do on this podcast is taking reader questions. We've talked about this numerous times, how much I love this. And our new process has been kind of a hit so far. We've gotten a really nice response. And I want to point out that the questions that we've pulled here to answer are from across the country. This isn't just St. Louis. We're going nationwide, baby.
We'll go with a quick spoiler. Mobile, Alabama, Salt Lake City, Rolla, Missouri, and
Franklin, Massachusetts. That's the one that got me, brother. That's got to be a Thunderbirds fan, but we'll get in there. We'll get to that.
It's like three different time zones, and if we took each city, it's kind of diamond-ish. I don't know. It's crazy.
What is it? National Treasure with Nick Cage. Don't be trying to figure out where it fits on a map, and we got it. I don't want any of that.
Hey, man, I'm just trying to find the Declaration of Independence. All right.
That's exactly what the Blues need. All right, Matt, here's our first question. David J. from Mobile, Alabama, since you spoiled where he's from already. What happened to Jordan Kyrou this year? Did his poor performance lower his trade value so much that it would be wise to hold on to him for at least another year to see if he rebounds?
So this is a great question. I've thought about it a little bit, and I think there's a few different things for Jordan Kyrou. Number one, the lack of a true number two center, I think, kind of hindered what was possible. In the past, he's been with Robert Thomas, and that's kind of come and gone through different waves. I think I've seen a partnership like that before in Dallas, actually, with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. There were years and years where they played together, and the results were fantastic, and then suddenly they stopped. They just weren't good together. There was a decision to split them up. And that's basically what we saw this year from the Blues. Like, Kyrou and Thomas didn't really play much together at all at even strength. So I think that's something that we look at, and we look at the second center behind Robert Thomas. And sometimes it was Braden Schenn. Sometimes it was Pew Suter. Sometimes it was Pavel Buchnevich. Dalibor Dvorsky got a few looks in that spot. So it wasn't like any one of those guys went out and grabbed that role. So I do think that's part of it. I think a bigger part of it is Jordan Kyrou didn't look all that noticeable away from the puck. And what I mean by that is last year, this is the 24-25 season, it seemed like he wanted to get the puck back in different zones. In the defensive zone, he was never really all that great on the boards, but he was in there, and he was trying to get the puck back. He was back checking in the neutral zone to go get the puck back. He wanted to go get the puck, and he went and got the puck a lot of times during that season. And I think that's something that we didn't quite see a lot of this year. We didn't quite see him getting out in transition a lot and being able to use his speed. I mean, how many times did we see him kind of put a defenseman on his heels, go wide around him and take it to the net? It just wasn't something that happens a ton this year. And speed is obviously a huge part of his game. And I think another part of it is also just his shooting. Like, he missed the net a lot more this year than he previously did. He had a lot fewer shot attempts this year than he previously did. I know he missed, I think, about 10 games with a knee injury earlier on this season. But here are his shot attempts for the last 4 years, right? So this year, 359. Last year was 465. So that's 106 fewer than last year. The year before was 506. So now we're looking at 147 shot attempt difference from 2 years ago. And the previous year was 470. So the last 3 years have all been, you know, in that 465 to 506 range, that 50 shot attempt range. And somehow this year he was at 359. And that's in all situations. So power play and even strength combines. He wasn't in those spots as often as we would have seen before. Now, that's kind of the looking back of it. You know, he had 18 goals, which is half as many as he had the previous year. We all know the production's been down. Now, if we look forward, we spin it forward and say, is it wise to hold on to him for another year to see if he rebounds? I think the production obviously wasn't good, but I don't think it changed how people thought about him in the league. I think a lot of people knew what he was in terms of an offense first guy who somehow he has incredible defensive metrics. And I a lot of these places do adjust for opponent quality, but I think that's also a big part of it. Robert Thomas got those assignments and Pugh Suter was right behind that. And Pavel Buchnevich was right behind that. Like Jordan Kyrou did not have to face the toughest opponents. So I do think that's part of his defensive metrics, even though some of them are accounted in that. But yeah, I think a lot of the lead knows what he is. They know he can score goals. They know he can shoot. They know he can use his speed. It's just a matter of if he does do it or not. And I don't know if that perception has really changed much around the league, and that would be what would impact his trade value.
You and I had a conversation during a podcast at one point this season where I kind of was like, hey, look at Kyrou getting involved on something other than a goal. And you were kind of like, yeah, I mean, that's, you know. And so here we are again, end of season, talking about a possible trade with the kind of the same situation. So, yeah, no, I think you've absolutely nailed it. I don't think it changed the perception of who he is at all. Whether that changes value, I don't know, but I think we'll see. You know, there's some really good symmetry though here with Matt. With the, I don't know if you did this on purpose, but with the questions that
we're going to have. Let me just finish up a little bit here.
Oh, it was such a good setup with the next one.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I know, but I did want to reiterate: Jordan Kyrou does have a no trade clause, and so if the Blues want to trade him, it's up to him. And this is something that our colleague Ben Hoffman actually just wrote recently, that a trade would kind of benefit Kyrou as well as just getting a new start, getting into a new franchise, new organization. So we'll see what happens there. And if both sides agree that that's the case, or if they get there at some point or another.
See, I was trying to tie it to Dvorsky. You had talked about a number two center. And the next question is about Dvorsky. So I was trying to squeeze it in there as close as I could. So our first question was from David J. in Mobile. Our second question is from David F. in Rolla. David wants to know, is it too early to be concerned about Dvorsky's uninspired play? Uninspired is his word, not mine.
Yeah, and I would say it's early, but I would say that you look at the rest of the players in his draft class, and you know, some of them have kind of gotten to the point where they, not where they're finished products, but that they're producing more than Dvorsky is, right? Like Dvorsky went 10th overall in 2023, and on the points leaderboard of the guys in that draft, I mean, you have Ryan Leonard, who was selected two spots before him, and he's got 46 points in 84 games. You have Matthew Wood, who was selected five slots behind him. He's got 31 points in 77 games. You know, you have some of these guys that are drafted behind him that have played fewer games that have more points. Like it's not a concerning thing, but it is something to monitor. The other thing with Dalibor Dvorsky is, I think we think that he's older than he is because he's been in the spotlight for as long as he has been in this organization. Like when he was drafted, he was their highest pick since Alex Pietrangelo. The Blues had not picked 10th since 08 when they took Pietrangelo fourth overall. And I believe he was the highest drafted Blues forward since they took Rod Brind'Amour. So that's been some time since they had a forward drafted that high. And so that's number one. I think number two, that first season after he was drafted, he played those first few games in Sweden, and then he came over to the Ontario Hockey League and played in Sudbury. And that kind of puts him a little bit more on the radar, where in Sweden, like, it's really hard to watch games in Sweden, whereas the Ontario Hockey League is very accessible from the United States. And it became a little bit more, I don't want to say on the radar, but watchable. And then last year, he's in the AHL, where he's 19 years old. Like, there's not a lot of 19-year-olds in the AHL. He was an all-star. He was on the all-rookie team. Like, there's – and I think we see now, like, this was basically his first full year in the NHL, even though we started it in Springfield. It feels like he's been around a while, but he is still a pretty young player. And there are things that I don't think we've seen the best out of him. He's known for his puck protection skills and his ability to put a guy on his hip and protect the puck, hold on to it, make plays. I didn't really see a ton of that. You saw it in flashes, definitely flashes. And then he's also known for his shot and the release, how quickly it comes off, how hard it is, how accurate it is. And we didn't really see a ton of that either. Like, it was tough to find the best of Dvorsky on a consistent basis. And, you know, yeah, he is only 20 years old. He'll turn 21 in a couple months, and that's part of it. And there's not a lot of Blues rookies other than basically Jimmy Snuggerud that have come in and lit it up. So I do think there is some growth there. Concern, sure, like, you want to see another step, but I don't think it's to a place where the worry is rampant.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Both those guys you mentioned, Leonard and Wood, are already 21. Dvorsky doesn't turn 21 until this summer. I mean, there's a difference of 6 months in age between those guys, but 6 months at 19, 20 years old is a lot of time. The other thing too, though, that, like, I don't know, this kind of feels pretty normal to me. Like, you go, like, we've spent this whole episode glowing about Robert Thomas and how great he can be. In his rookie season, his 19-20 season, he played 70 games, one fewer than Dvorsky, and only scored 9 goals. Dvorsky had 12 this season. Like, were we worried about Robert Thomas? I don't know. But we're not today, so it kind of just feels like it's too early to make a call on anybody, really, but especially on a guy like Dvorsky. But that's just me.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I think there were some parallels to be made when we were talking about the role that would put Dvorsky in coming into the league. Like, Thomas came in, he was on the third line. He played wing that entire season with Tyler Bozak and Pat Maroon in the playoffs, at least. And so he played right wing on third line. He wasn't asked to do a ton more. Obviously, they're different players. Thomas is a much greater facilitator, but that was kind of a role you looked at. Say, hey, would the Blues do that to Dvorsky? And they opted to play him at his natural center position. And, you know, the Olympics were great for him. He had a great Olympics. There was thought that that would carry over into the last half of the season, and it just didn't. You know, he had a long goalless streak. He was a healthy scratch. He came back towards the end of the season, the last week or two. He was taken off the power play. So the coaching staff saw it and they kind of pulled back the responsibility a little bit. But I think we all think that there's more to give from Dalibor Dvorsky, and we'll see where it goes next year.
Yeah. Speaking of next year, Brian B from Salt Lake City, reach all across the country, Netfront presence has, wants to know, what do the Blues have in a backup goaltender next season if they decide to trade Binnington and go with Joel Hofer?
So I think if they do trade Jordan Binnington, it's the replacement as a backup goaltender is going to have to come externally. Internally, what they have is they have Georgi Romanov, Vadim Zarenko, and Will Cranley. And none of them, well, I guess Romanov has played in the NHL before with San Jose, but none of them have really have the track record or the performance in the AHL to say this guy is ready. It wasn't like we were looking at Joel Hofer from a few years ago or even Colton Ellis recently, where you said, all right, that guy could be a backup in the NHL. None of those guys really have that right now. So I think the replacement would either have to come in the trade, potential trade that Bennington's included in. You get a backup goalie coming back the other way. Or on the free agent market, there are a few options. It's not, you know, flush. I think it'd be a bad free agent market if you're looking for a starting goaltender, for sure. But if you're looking for a backup goaltender, you have a guy like Daniil Tarasov, who was in Florida this year. He was 27. You have a guy, Eric Comrie, who's backed up Connor Hellebuck the last few years. And, you know, I don't think they want to give Joel Hofer a Connor Hellebuck type workload next season. But there's an option there. Same thing with Vitek Vanacek. You know, Kirill Vemelka in Utah, I think, played the most games of any goaltender in the league, and Vanacek was his backup. So you have these guys who are 30 years old, but have a little bit less wear on their bodies because of the workloads of the starters in front of them. So you do have a few different options. They're not the best options out there. But if you needed a backup and you're saying, hey, we're not going to be, we just need kind of a stopgap maybe to get us a year or two until maybe a guy like Luve Herenstam or their goalie that they got from the Islanders in the Shen trade, Matt Skidloff, if they're ready in a few years, what that looks like, or even if they're able to find an even more veteran guy on the trade market. I think there are options out there. I just don't think those come internally with guys like Zarenko, Romanov, and Cranley.
Yeah. And then our last question, Matt, Rob D. from Franklin, Massachusetts. There's that reach again. Wants to know, any idea why Berggren was a healthy scratch on a fairly regular basis? Says he can see, you know, the way his actions play out on TV. Says he has decent speed, one of the better passers on the team. He says only second to Thomas in his book. Said he always seemed to make good plays. You know, was there something going on away from the play? He wants to know, something negative in the locker room, maybe just a beef with Montgomery, which doesn't seem likely, but...
Yeah, it was a decision-making process that I think a lot of us were confused by late in the season, because Berggren did play pretty well, and you saw all these kind of eye-opening passes in the offensive zone, setting up teammates, and if he had more skilled teammates, maybe he'd have more assists right now, but there were a lot of high-end passes that you look at and say, whoa, like that's who made that pass, and it was Berggren a lot. And so I think it was a confusing thing for a lot of us. And when we did ask Jim Montgomery about it, the way that he described it was that, you know, he wants a more consistent battle level. And from a lot of guys, he says, well, yeah, you have to be able to go in there on a consistent basis, win pucks, and kind of do the dirty work instead of all of the nice, pretty passes. And I do get that to a point, but there's, if you have a guy as skilled as Berggren and what he can do with the puck, I think you got to be able to live with some of those things. It's not like he is being asked to do Jordan Kyrou things. He's basically been playing the third line minutes. And I think if you're giving him 10 minutes a night and he's dropping two or three grade A passes, I think you have to be able to live with that.
And he's a restricted free agent next season, I guess this offseason, right? So he would... They could bring him back.
Will bring yeah, him I mean, they'd have to sign him to a new contract, but yeah, he's an right. RFA, so yeah, he's due a new contract for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there could be some opportunity. You know, we've talked a lot this episode about what next season could bring and what this offseason could bring in terms of roster openings, and sounds like there's an opportunity for him to maybe earn a little more time next year.
Yeah, and I think the thing that kind of puzzled me down the stretch was when they're taking him out of the lineup and scratching him, the minutes are going to a guy like Jonathan Drouin, who they kind of know who he is, and he is under contract next year at $4 million. But, like, is he going to be back? Are they going to waive him? Like, are they going to try to trade him? Are they, like, it doesn't seem like Drouin is a piece of the future, and he was someone who was playing over Berggren, so that was something that was – a little bit kind of eye-opening or eyebrow-raising.
Yeah, I